Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Full Press Coverage Radio Live. That's right. It's Friday. It's May the 27th. It's the last show of the month. Perhaps. We might get an episode out on Monday. We'll see. But for now, we're going to assume this is the last show of the great month of May as we move into June, which is, unfortunately, the absolute deadest period of the time in the NFL. But fortunately, we also have both the NBA and NHL playoffs going on, and baseball is in full swing. Pun intended. But that's not where we're going to start today. Of course, when you get the news yesterday that the great Ray Liotta passed away, and you have two people who host the show that are incredible fans of not only the genre that he excelled in, but also just him in general, it's definitely a sad day. And at 67, it's a little, seems a little too soon for someone, certainly in this day and age. But we are going to take a moment to kind of talk about some of the greatness of Ray Liotta. And of course, John, it begins and ends here.
Oh, Pete. Oh, fuck is... Gee, I wish I was big just once.
You're a
big cop.
You're a pussy. Really funny. Really funny.
What do you mean I'm funny?
It's funny, you know. It's a good story. It's funny. You're a funny guy.
What do you mean? You mean the way I talk? What?
Just, you know, you're just funny. It's funny, you know, the way you tell the story and everything.
Funny how? I mean, what's funny about it?
Yeah, Tommy, no, you got it all wrong.
Oh, Anthony. He's a big boy. He knows what he said. What'd you say?
You're right.
Funny how? What?
Just, you know, you're funny.
You mean, let me understand this, because maybe it's me. I'm a little fucked up, maybe. But I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you. I make you laugh. I'm here to fucking amuse you. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
No, just, you know how you tell the story. What?
No, I don't know. You said it. How do I know? You said I'm funny. How the fuck am I funny? What the fuck is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's funny.
Get the fuck out of here, Tommy.
You motherfucker. I almost had him. I almost had him.
Oh, man. You know, John, I feel like we have that conversation every day off the air. If people really knew the tenseness that we have off the air, the conversations we have. No, that's obviously a great scene from the movie Goodfellas, and both of our favorite movies of all time, certainly in that discussion. Definitely sad news yesterday.
Oh, it really was. I mean, he hadn't looked to be in great health the last time you saw him, and he was doing some commercials, and then you find out he's filming in the Dominican Republic, and he dies in his sleep, and it's just kind of like part of your past that's being pulled away. When it happened, I'm like, let me go back to Goodfellas, which was 32 years ago. So I was like 27 years old, and it kind of puts me in a place of where I was 27 years ago and how great a film that was and how fantastic he was in it. And, you know, Martin Scorsese is my favorite director, and Robert De Niro growing up, my favorite actor, and Joe Pesci was great. And it was just like, man, you know, we're all getting old, and then you see someone who still should be in the prime of his life dying. It was kind of jarring. It was similar to, you know, when James Gandolfini died back in 2013. I remember that very vividly. We were sitting down to watch Blackhawks-Bruins game 4, I believe, in the 2013 Stanley Cup Finals, and then it came through social media that James Gandolfini died in his early 50s, and I'm like, oh, man, this was jarring as well, because you never think these people are going to die. Obviously they do, but you think they'd live longer than 67 because they do have better access to, you know, medicine and healthcare than the average person, but unfortunately, may he rest in peace, a fantastic actor.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we know he lobbied very hard to play the role of Henry Hill. He had to really, because, you know, at that point, he had been in Field of Dreams. That was kind of his, you know, big moment prior to Goodfellas. But it was really Goodfellas that really just catapulted his career. I mean, like, he was in the Dominican Republic filming a movie. I mean, the guy was still working, whether it was in bit roles, bit parts here and there. But, you know, obviously, Goodfellas is the first movie that comes to mind. You know, I'm a huge fan of the movie Blow, and he played George Young's father, Fred Young, in that movie. And you know, in a step away from his typecast, so to speak. He played the, you know, the caring, loving father to a troubled youth who, you know, happens to be one of the bigger drug traffickers during the 70s. So, like, you know, it was a step away from his, you know, mob-type performances and stuff like that. But, you know, whatever he did, whatever he was a part of, you know, you knew you were getting a solid, at worst, performance. At best, it was a great performance, and that's generally what you got from him.
Yeah, so many really good roles that I think kind of went under the radar, like Copland. He was fantastic in a movie with De Niro and Sylvester Stallone. And another one that, you know, may have been his last real huge movie, which I thought was fantastic, The Place Beyond the Pines, which was with Ryan Gosling, who's one of my favorite actors, Bradley Cooper, obviously Ray Liotta, and the beautiful Eva Mendes, who is Ryan Gosling's wife. A fantastic film. And then his real first breakthrough, I mean, Goodfellas is what put him on the map. But Something Wild, which was directed by Jonathan Demme, has since passed and is one of the most talented directors in the history of Hollywood. He was fantastic in that, and obviously Field of Dreams. And then when Goodfellas came, it was like, okay, this guy can hold his own against, you know, Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci and all those great actors that were in that landmark film. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I know that think that Goodfellas is their favorite film. It's not mine. Because I don't even think it's Scorsese's best film. I think Raging Bull is a superior film. But I understand why so many people love Goodfellas. A lot of people, especially maybe your age and a little bit older, that's like their favorite film.
Well, and I think it's not my part. I've obviously, you know, when when the day comes that we have to mourn some of the cast of The Shawshank Redemption, then, you know, that's a day that, you know, I will talk about my favorite film. But, you know, I don't think that too many people have that film outside of their, and this is kind of what I was alluding to when I was talking about both of us. I don't think it's far off from, I think it's certainly within the a realm of some of the best films that we've seen, personally.
Oh, yeah. It's in my top 20. I mean,
I think
I come across sometimes as a snob.
Well, no,
I'm also older, so I got exposed to a lot of stuff early that, you know, I still put there.
Well, but that's right. Kind of what I was thinking. Although what I was in my, you know what I mean? Like maybe that's right in the ballpark of what I'm thinking, because like I'm top 20 to me is, you know, we're not talking quarterbacks here. Like it's actually impressive to be top 20 here. Because there's just, I mean, there's so many films, and you're like me, like we have a broad taste. Like, you know, we're not just X, Y, and Z type of films. You know, there's W, X, Y, Z, A, B, C, you know, whatever's good, whatever could be good, we're going to be interested in. So, you know, of course you draw from a lot of different genres in that sense, but, yeah, I mean, look, it's definitely, sad. Obviously you mentioned The Sopranos earlier. He was in the, you know, Many Saints in Newark, remake, just, you know, when did that was like, what, 4 years ago, 2018 now, 2019?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah. You know, the years kind of mashed together. Yeah, kind of, it's just
the
like
last
a
5 years is like a blur.
Yeah, well, I mean, the only constant is Tom Brady's excellence, but that's besides the point. That's a conversation I was having on Twitter yesterday. But it's definitely we've done a handful of these. It seems like at least once a month we got to get up here and talk about some sort of actor or celebrity that has passed away. But look, John, the reality of it is the stuff that you and I have both, you know, obviously I'm a little bit younger, but the movies from the 70s, 80s, and some of these early 90s movies, like, you know, the stars of these movies are getting a lot older. And the bulk of my movie watching comes from that chunk of time, let's put it that way. So now you're seeing, you know, these actors and actresses and stuff like that get older, and to your point earlier, you have this in your mind that, yeah, of course everyone's time is up at some point, but you still kind of convince yourself like, oh yeah, no, he's always going to be able to do that. Like, oh no, you know, Harrison Ford is always going to be able to play Indiana Jones. Well, we'll find out when the next one comes out if he can still do it. But you know, the point is, it's like, you know, that generation of great actors and actresses is getting close to becoming extinct, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, It is, because, I mean, I grew up, my favorite actors growing up, in some order, were Robert De Niro, Dustin Hoffman, Al Pacino, Jack Nicholson. I love Warren Beatty, Robert Redford, Paul Newman, you know, all those phenomenal actors. And now you got Robert De Niro, who's 79 years old. Dustin Hoffman is 85. Al Pacino, who I share a birthday with, April 25th. He's a little older than me, but he's 82. And Warren Beatty and Jack Nicholson are 85. And I'm like, they're all still around. They're not really working much for different reasons. But there's going to be that day where you just hear the bad news, the sad news. Mm. Now, at least they've been able to live a pretty long life. Well, Ray Liotta, 67, just that's only 8 years older than me. That's kind of scary, you know, when you hear that. Now, obviously, Gandolfini, when that happened, he was right at 50. That was a shock. But, yeah, this is, again, it kind of like pries away your childhood or your, you know, early adult life where, you know, you're really into movies and these are your guys and you got to see everything they're in, and then sometimes they're no longer there. Harrison Ford's a great one because you just think he's never going to die. He's going to always escape because he's Indiana Jones, right? You know, it's like that's never going to catch up to him. But, yeah, you know, everything is inevitable. We share the same favorite actor at this point, Daniel Day-Lewis, who's, you know, in his mid-60s. And I'm surprised that, you know, because he's such a great method actor that he didn't actually get assassinated in making Lincoln.
Yeah. He's so committed to method acting.
Yes.
That actually yep. makes me wonder. I know you're not maybe as up on some of the new Marvel movies as I am, but the new Thor movie is coming out soon, and Christian Bale is playing one of the villains, and he's notorious for also being a very dedicated method actor, and I'm so worried about that cast and what he went through to become Gore the Butcher. So, it kind of worries me. And you know, we know some of the crazies, and we talk about this in sports all the time. Some of the best people are a little bit nuts, and I think we all know. You remember that clip a while back of Christian Bale, like basically just undressing, like. The staff and like yelling and you know, kind of being just a huge a-hole. Did you ever hear that?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So, it comes with the territory. Just because we like them as actors doesn't mean they're necessarily great people. You know, I think there's been some negative things written about Christian Bale, but hey, you know what? He was a really good Batman, and he's done a lot of other really good movies.
Fantastic.
But, you know, that's the thing. Sometimes you got to be a little bit nuts to be great at what you do. Ray Liotta wasn't. He was just a gifted actor who, by all accounts, was, you know, well-loved and liked among his peers. And based on what we saw, the reaction and everything, you know, that only kind of confirmed all that. So, sadly, that is it for Ray. And we will remember by watching a lot of his great movies. And that's the great thing about having that type of history on film and in photos and stuff like that. You can keep going back and back and reliving it. So, speaking of history, John, Dallas Mavericks, they are history. They got eliminated last night. Really, what I thought, and I commented earlier in the game, I thought they checked out, and early in the second quarter. They, to my surprise, made a little bit of a run, which I wasn't expecting. But just early on, they just absolutely checked out. And I don't know. I don't watch as much Dallas Mavericks basketball, but that was, especially during that first half, a pretty lackluster defensive effort from Luka. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, he's not a really good defensive player. And then if he's not engaged, he's actually a hindrance on the defensive end of the court. And
that's what I think happened.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing that will keep him maybe from being the best player in basketball, because the current best player in basketball, Giannis Antetokounmpo, is very engaged defensively. In fact, it seems like he's more engaged defensively than offensively sometimes. That's what makes him the best player. And the players that have always held that mantle, whether it was LeBron or Michael Jordan, they were elite defensive players. Luka's never going to be an elite defensive player, but at least look engaged. And this has always been an accusation in the NBA when a team gets down 3-1 and they're going – to the other team's court for game 5, it's like, you know, 1-2-3 Cancun. And it appeared that way with Dallas, who just was overmatched in the series anyway. I mean, we talked about it, that if you were drafting the rosters of these two teams, Luka would go first, and then the next six picks would be Golden State Warriors, whether it be Curry, Thompson, Draymond Green, Jordan Poole, Andrew Wiggins. I mean, they're just a better team than Dallas. But, yeah, there's no excuse for not being engaged somewhat defensively. And Jason Kidd, the head coach, was a marvelous defensive player, so he's got to communicate that to his team. And, again, when your best player gets engaged defensively, the other guys on the court get engaged defensively. We've seen that over the years. And if Luka's kind of mailing it in, then the other four players on the court are like, well, he's not really into it. Why should I be? He's supposed to be our best player.
There was a sequence, maybe you remember this, I believe it was in the second quarter, where Dallas was just basically caught flat-footed defensively, and just unfortunately for Golden State, they missed two very easy layups, and I think the reason for that was because they were so surprised that Dallas did absolutely nothing that it threw them off when they were going to finish. Like, do you remember that sequence? I think I think it was Andrew Wiggins, and I think the second play ultimately was a foul, if I'm not mistaken, but still, the Dallas, they were just watching, and I think that this was an instance where Luka was still kind of, you know, rumbling down from the other end of the court. So, yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I don't think any of us thought there was a legitimate chance. I mean, obviously, it's never happened in the NBA before to come back down 3-0, but that was definitely disappointing early on because, you know, we saw later in the game that they were capable of going on a nice run, but, you know, too little too late at that point. You know, at that point, it's like, is it really that impressive, John, when a team's down 20-something points that they go on a run? Like, to me, that's kind of like a quarterback that throws 500 yards in a blowout loss. Like, well, yeah, I mean, the only thing you can do is throw the ball, and naturally the other team isn't going to maintain that level of intensity when the score becomes such a large gap. And I think that's what happened yesterday, where it's like, okay, Golden State, you know, they built such a big lead, they kind of started celebrating a little bit early, and all of a sudden now, John, when you're down 26, it sounds crazy, but I feel like, or whatever the it was at the time, I think I just quoted one of the Celtics scores, but when you're down so much, like, it honestly, sometimes the pressure becomes less.
Sure.
Because, like, where's the pressure? Well, if you make a shot, well, great, you're still down deep. If you miss a shot, well, it doesn't really matter. You're not, you know, at this point, the game's not really on the line because you're down so much. So, to me, I'm not that impressed with, you know, runs necessarily when you're down. I mean, I'm not saying you can't have impressive runs. I'm just saying that not every run when you're down big points is impressive. It's just sometimes just so we saw Dallas go on a little run, but the big picture was they just were not engaged enough throughout that entire game defensively, especially defensively, because it just looked too easy for Golden State at some times where they were just standing, watching and letting it go. So, you know, this might create, John, and we've talked about these two, you know, kind of side by side, you know, a few times, but Luka and Jason Tatum, where, you know, I think going into this playoff series or season, you would have put Luka ahead of Jason, and your reasoning being, like, Luka can just do a little bit more, correct?
Yeah, on the offensive end, he's a significantly better passer. I mean, I think he's one of the five best passers in the sport. He's a better rebounder. He's a moose. I mean, he's just kind of this big, naturally strong guy. I think he can score in a variety of ways, maybe a little bit more than Tatum. Neither one's a great three-point shooter, which is odd, and that's why when they compare Luka to Larry Bird, is it just because he's white? I mean, his game is a little different than Larry Bird's. Larry Bird was an elite shooter, like one of the best shooters that sport's ever seen, including with like a 90% free throw percentage for his career. I mean, Luka's around 74%. But where you might give Tatum the edge, obviously, on the defensive end, and that it looks like he's in shape. Well, Luka, that's the thing with Luka, like, someone's got to get in his head that, look, you can be the best player in basketball, but in the offseason, you can't put 30 pounds on. You know, I mean, his idol is LeBron James. You know, follow that model of, you know, investing in your body and being the best you can be, which LeBron has done throughout his career, and then you can be in that discussion. So, yeah, maybe you could look at it and say, look, at the end of a game, sometimes Tatum has a little more in the tank because he's just in better shape.
Well, you know, and I think when – and the strange thing with Tatum – if Tatum is – that's the thing. When he's – shooting the three well, he's great at it, but it's not consistent enough You know what I'm saying? Like, if it was consistent enough, you would say he's a great 3-point shooter, because he has a great stroke, he has a great, you know, release, everything like that. It looks nice. He can hit those difficult corner threes when he's on fire, but then he can go 2-for-11 or 2-for-12, right. and you're sitting there scratching your head like, okay, what's happening? He turns into a chucker at that point. But there could be. I mean, look. I mean, I'm for the most part with you. I mean, I kind of defer a lot to your technical analysis of basketball, because you know the game a little bit better than I do, and by a little bit, I mean a lot of it. Yes. Unfortunately, my mic just cut out weirdly enough, so unfortunately the folks out there didn't actually hear that. But
I did, though.
Nonetheless, I do defer to you when it comes to a lot of that technicality. But it'd be hard to not start to, maybe sway if Tatum, like, look, he's had some tough moments in this playoff run, no doubt about it. But for the most part, he's been kind of playing that role of superstar pretty well, John. I wouldn't say, like, you know, Oscar performance, since we were talking about acting earlier, but I'd say he's playing the role fairly well, and he still has a lot of opportunity ahead of him. And I think if he can seize that opportunity, i.e. say the Celtics close out the Heat tonight in game 6, and then he plays a massive role in upsetting or defeating, however you want to look at it. I don't know if it would necessarily be an upset from a on-paper standpoint, but, you know, you can look at it as a difficult matchup. If they go out and beat Golden State and Jason Tatum, you know, is averaging 30 points a game, he's playing well defensively and facilitating. I mean, that's the thing. He's capable of doing that. He's capable of creating opportunities for everyone else around him. That's the moment that you sit there and say, okay, maybe he has arrived now. And that's what we were asking before going into the postseason. We're like, we both think Jason Tatum's great. And his you know, path to superstardom is strong and, you know, going strong right now. But he has to do it in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And so far, I'd say he's doing it. He's not perfect, but...
No, they're one game away from getting to the finals. I think his monumental game was game 6 against Milwaukee 2 weeks ago when they're facing elimination in Milwaukee, mm-hmm. and he goes out and gets 46.
That was head-to-head with who a lot of people... Yeah, exactly. Right. And I think that is key. That is key. I mean, if he's going head-to-head with Jimmy Butler, like Jimmy Butler isn't Giannis, okay? I mean, Jimmy Butler's a fine player, but he's not Giannis. He's not a superstar of that caliber. So him going head-to-head with Jimmy Butler is one thing. Going head-to-head with Giannis, who was just an absolute force in that series, that's what's impressive. And those are those benchmarks that you look for in a budding superstar. You know, and again, winning a championship's part of it, because it means you delivered. And the Celtics, like, if Jason Tatum goes out and plays poorly and fine, they're not winning that series. They're like, you can miss Marcus Smart and you can make up for it. You can miss Robert Williams and you can make up for it. I mean, you can lose. I mean, it's getting tougher and tougher, but you could possibly be without Al Horford and you could still kind of make up for it. If you get a no-show from Jason Tatum, you are not winning this series. And it's not even going to be close. So his importance on the court is obviously very apparent. But if he can elevate his game or continue to elevate his game, then I think it can become a real discussion about his superstardom. Because then it would be harder and harder to say that, no, he's not one of the premier superstars in this league if he leads the Celtics to a championship this year.
The impressive part about the other night is he was 1 of 9 from the floor in the first half. They're down 5 points. He comes out and has a really good second half. But through it all, he gave you 12 rebounds, 9 assists. That's when you see a player elevating to becoming great. I know I go back, you know, 41 years with this reference, but so be it. We mentioned Larry Bird already. In the 1981 finals, Larry Bird had back-to-back 8-point games, games 3 and 4 in Houston. He had 8 points in each of those games. However, in those two games, he amassed 27 rebounds and 15 assists, 7 steals and 3 blocks. So he wasn't shooting well. He wasn't scoring, but he did everything else. Now, Bird had the good fortune of having a lot of really great players around him. Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish, Cedric Maxwell, who was actually the finals MVP that year, Tiny Archibald. Tatum has that too. I mean, Jaylen Brown is a, you know, an all-star caliber player. He's made it once, and I think he'll
just not dribbling the ball.
As long as he's not dribbling,
I don't know about,
the crowd.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about you, but watching that game the other night, I'm thinking, oh my God, how could I have been so right earlier that day talking about Jaylen Brown and dribbling the ball?
Oh,
I was just thinking about our conversation.
It's maddening, and because the thing that Jaylen Brown should do more of, and look, the whole league is, you know, three or at the rim. Those are like the only two places you can score. There is a wide range in the middle, the mid-range game, which is still available. He has a really good mid-range game. Like he has the ability to drive and then pull up from 15 feet, elevate and shoot. That's not a lot of guys can do that. You know, Jordan had it, Kobe had it. LeBron never had it because he's too freaking big. You can't stop that quickly and elevate at 260 pounds. Jaylen Brown has that. Do that more. Don't try to just drive to the rim and get into traffic. And look, Jaylen Brown's a guy who he's probably my favorite Celtic. I just like him on and off the court. I find him to be a really smart, interesting guy. I like the way he's worked his butt off to become an all-star caliber player. But that's a weakness. And his turnovers are a weakness. I mean, in 42 career playoff games, he has as many turnovers as assists, which is, you know, Jameis Winston territory.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, he could clean that stuff up. But at least, as back to the earlier discussion, Tatum has Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, Marcus Smart, Robert Williams. He's got a good group around him. And look, you can almost compare it a little bit to Paul Pierce in 2008. Paul Pierce outlasted LeBron in the second round, 7 games, Celtics over Cleveland. And then in the finals, he beats Kobe and the Lakers. And he's the finals MVP. No one thought at that point that Paul Pierce was better than LeBron or Kobe, but he beat them both. Tatum, I think, will be the best player on the court in the finals. As much as Steph Curry historically is a greater player, at the present time, Jason Tatum's a better player than Steph Curry because he can do more things. He's 6 inches taller, and he's a better defender. He can rebound at a higher level. But now he would be facing a team that their best player has a great supporting cast in Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Jordan Poole. So that final series, if it happens, and let's hope the Celtics take care of business tonight so that they have a little bit of rest and a lead-up time to the finals, that's going to be a really good series. Completely different than this Miami series, which at times has been really, really tough to watch.
Yeah, and look, ironically, it might be, of the three opponents they face so far, probably the weakest, and it's in the conference final. But big picture, though, think about the path. I don't think this is being talked about enough. You sweep Brooklyn, then you go head-to-head with the defending champions, with, again, Giannis, with or without Chris Middleton. I mean, it's still, you know, that's the funny thing. If you want to bring up, you know, Chris Middleton, then we can go back and look at the Bucks championship run and, you know, go from there. So that's a thread you don't want to pull. You go through the defending champions, and then you go through the Heat, who, you know, number one seed. So you don't have home court advantage. And then you go to, you know, the best team of the last decade, and you have to face them. Think about that gauntlet of a run for the Celtics. And you're one game away from reaching that final battle, so to speak, between Golden State. That's pretty darn impressive. Regardless of who is or isn't playing for these teams, they had their superstars, and that's the most important thing. And the Celtics have went toe-to-toe with all of them so far. This isn't a, oh, they drew the Atlanta Hawks in the round one, you know, number one versus eight seed. Like, that's where it's like, you know, the Atlanta Hawks, for years, they were just the team that everyone swept in the first round. It's just like, great, awesome. That's a cakewalk. Obviously, you know, Brooklyn was that sweep, but, you know, I think you would give a little bit more credit to Brooklyn or beating Brooklyn than it would be those Hawks teams that I'm referencing. And I think, you know, the ballpark I'm talking about, you get the idea. I'm not pinpointing any specific Hawks team, just a handful of them that actually did that. So, you know, yeah, this is pretty impressive. And even Miami's path to this point, it was a little bit less impressive if you want to, you know, stack them up side by side. So, I think that's something that hasn't necessarily been talked about, but in fairness, I don't really know if I want to be talking about it until they get the job done, hopefully tonight.
So you're, a little superstitious, and I get it, because the Celtics have, on two occasions since they won their championship, had two opportunities, up 3-2, in the Eastern Conference Finals. In 2012, they lost to Miami. In 2018, they lost to Cleveland, but the common denominator is there. LeBron James was on those teams, so you never felt comfortable.
And there was also
this Celtics team is better than those two teams.
Oh, for sure. And I think
2012 team still had the remnants of the great.
Yeah, but I would say
but they were old.
Yeah, exactly. Like the timing of those matchups, it's like, you know, you have the Celtics on their last legs, literally,
right.
Going up against the peak of the, you know, the Heat have already gone through that struggling first season where it's like they didn't quite find their identity. At this point, they've reached their max ability. And then on the flip side, a few years later, you have a Celtics team who vastly overachieved. And we've talked about this before, who just took advantage of a relatively weak Eastern Conference. And it doesn't discredit what Cleveland did. It doesn't discredit what the Celtics did. It's just, hey, you know, when you're starting Kelly Olynyk and you go to Eastern Conference Finals, well, guess what? I mean, maybe you might be overachieving a little bit. Just saying. Mm-hmm. Now, though, that's the thing. It's like this Celtics team is one of the premier teams, if not the premier team in the league right now. They may solidify that in a few weeks if they you know, win this series and the next. So it's a lot different circumstance. And even though they would be going up against Golden State, this isn't quite Golden State of a few years ago. But I don't want people to just, you know, ride with that, because this is a frightening team for the Celtics to go up against. We saw what they could do last night. I mean, if any team's like the Celtics and have scorers across the table, it's mm-hmm. Golden State. I mean, I don't think any other team in these playoffs, or at least the teams that the Celtics have played, have a Derek White. I mean, who has a Derek White who can come in and perform like he did the other night in Marcus Smart's place, or then come out and have another big game in game five? Like, I don't think any of these other Eastern Conference teams have that player. Maybe Tyler Hero, the sixth man of the year, but he's not playing. He's injured. So, you know, who has it? I mean, I don't know. Golden State does, and that's where the That's where it's really going to be difficult. So regardless of how poor some of these playoff series and some of these games in particular have been in terms of an entertainment and competitive standpoint, I think you're in for one hell of a series if it ends up being Boston and Golden State, because I think they're very similar with different advantages, but those advantages tend to kind of butt heads, and I think it's going to lead to six or seven very close contest between the two teams.
You have arguably the best offense in basketball going against, which I think most people agree is the best defense in basketball. So that's always a fun.
I thought you were talking about my personal basketball offense. I was like, well, John, thank you very much.
Oh.
I do have a great handle. I mean, I'm not quite Kyrie Irving, but I'm not Jaylen Brown either. So
as long as you're somewhere in between, then you'll be fine.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that would be a great matchup. That's always a fun matchup, right, offense against defense. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, give me the team with defense. We're both of the idea that sometimes the offense is unstoppable. You know, mm-hmm. we see that in football. It's like, yeah, you can have a great defense, but if the quarterback is that good, well, he'll just...
Yeah, I don't subscribe to defense wins championships.
Right.
I think that's an outdated notion that you know, unfortunately...
It helps, but it's not...
It helps, yeah. Oh, sure, it helps. Yeah, it doesn't mean it's pointless. It definitely helps.
Exactly.
But yeah, offense wins championships in football, and you know what? Basketball too. Let's face
it. Absolutely. And the interesting thing is Golden State plays good defense in addition to their great offense, and the Celtics play good offense when they move the basketball. You know, when they're able to get that dribble penetration, kick out to the wings, they can hit threes. I think it's going to be a fascinating series. Let's just hope they wrap this thing up tonight, because you don't want to go back to Miami for Game 7. That's always a daunting task. And then you really cut into your time to mm-hmm. get healthy, get ready for the Golden State Warriors. You wrap things up tonight, at least you got a 5-day window to get Smart and Williams a little bit healthier than they are right now.
And don't forget, I mean, you're talking about cross-country travel, too. This is not going to be an easy final series for either team, not just the Celtics. But to your point, you know, you're talking about potentially having, you know, the finals would start on June 2nd, which is Thursday. So you're talking about either having essentially – almost a full week off versus 3 or 4 days, and then you have to add in a trip to Miami, back to Boston likely, and then from Boston to San Francisco. Because who would have home court advantage? It would
Golden
be the South. Would it be Golden State?
Golden State had the better record. They had 53.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You're right. I couldn't recall their record right off the top of my head. So you're talking about a lot of travel and immediately following the series, if that's the case, and that's an issue. So if you're the Celtics, it behooves you, John.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that word. I don't ever get
that's
to use
a great
it.
Word. Oh, I love it's one that of my word. Favorites.
It behooves the Celtics to win tonight and just wrap it up and just get healthy and get prepared for what I think is going to be one hell of a NBA final series. So
yeah, and I think they will. I mean, again,
yeah,
unless
if
Williams and Smart are really hobbled and can't play, and somehow Tyler Hero makes a miraculous comeback and plays, you know, that could kind of sway things a little bit. But the important thing is get out to an early lead. Miami looks like they've checked out. I mean, Miami's starting backcourt the last two games, Kyle Lowry and Max Strus, 1 for 28 from the floor.
Look, I would love to pile on Kyle Lowry right now, but you know, we know he's hurt, he is obviously hurt, and look, I mean, we talked about this the last time. Like, how many quarters? We've played six games, so that's 24 quarters of basketball that we've seen play between these two teams. Celtics have dominated essentially 22 of those 24 quarters.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah,
I mean,
had two really good quarters. That's why they won those two games. Mm-hmm. That's been about it. The Celtics, this happens in the NBA. It's just because of the three-point shot, right? The other night, Miami goes 7 of 45 from three-point land.
Yeah.
That's just, like, doesn't even seem possible. It's 15.6%.
Well, who would they have to even elevate that? I don't. Tyler Hero's
Tyler
not
Hero,
playing.
The guy, yeah.
He's not playing.
Duncan Robinson is a good shooter, but he kind of, like, fell out of favor late in the year, so he's not up to speed. Max Strus is a good shooter. It can't hit anything. And the worst-looking shots came from Victor Oladipo with back-to-back wide-open threes from the left wing, and he overshot the basket, and it hit the backboard on the other side. I mean, you know, he almost broke the backboard. This is a team, Ian, that was number one in the league in three-point shooting during the regular season. Now, the Celtics' defense is excellent, but they had a lot of wide-open looks, and they missed. Again, 7 for 45 is bad, and that starting backcourt, 1 for 28 from the floor over the last two games. Like, they'd be better off starting Gabe Vincent. At least he looks like he's somewhat engaged. I mean, they may be getting, you know, be better off starting Gabe Kapler if they could. I just, you know, they need some help there. And how do you sit Kyle Lowry? He's kind of like, you know, a blood guts type guy, but he's clearly, you know.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, he's what is he, 35, 36 now?
36, and he's always looked like a guy that's a little on the chunky side. Not that I should speak to that. He doesn't look to be – look, he's a fabulous player. I love him. I mean, if he's on your team, you'll love him. He's kind of a more skilled version of Marcus Smart. But, you know, he doesn't look like he's ready for this type of series. When you're going against Tatum and Brown, just look like different quality athletes on the floor than the guys Miami has. Right? I mean, like, Brown and Tatum look like – they look like high school seniors – playing against middle-aged kids.
Well, you know, it's funny. We've spent all this time talking about Tatum specifically and Jaylen Brown, but, you know, if this series ends tonight, Al Horford may be your Larry Bird Eastern Conference final MVP. And it would be almost a very legitimate award, because you talk about performances with ability to affect a game without scoring points. Good God, is Al Horford just on a mission? I mean, I have not seen him play this well in so long. I mean, there was a, I can't remember, I think it was in game four, there was this rebound, offensive rebound that he got, where he jumped, he was on, I believe he was off on the left wing or whatever, and the ball bounced, and he, like, contorted his body and stretched his arms out and got this rebound. I was just like, all right, Al, okay, all right. But, you know, the guy, again, defensively, offensively, whether he's scoring points or not, he's been phenomenal in this series, and I think you know, if he has another big game tonight, you know, he would certainly be deserving of it. It would likely go to Tatum, especially if he has a solid game tonight and they win. But that just speaks to the depth of this team. So, all right, we're going to wrap it
now
up.
Will Bird be in the arena? That's the question.
Oh, I doubt it.
Magic, no, I do too. I don't think Larry Bird is getting off his couch at this point. But Magic Johnson was not there last night to present Steph Curry with the Magic Johnson Award for Western Conference Finals MVP. But I don't think Bird's showing up to the Garden tonight to present whoever.
That would be nice, though. It would be nice.
It would
wrinkle,
be, yeah.
So. But anyways, we're going to wrap it up here today a little early. But thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We will be back potentially Monday. Keep an eye out at FPC Radio Live for any sort of update in terms of our schedule and everything like that. But in the meantime, have a great weekend. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. Be safe. Enjoy basketball as much as we have left. Enjoy the hockey games. We had another thriller last night if anyone was watching the Battle of Alberta. I highly recommend it. It was enthralling, exciting, and it only went one overtime. Thank God, because I don't know if I could have lasted too much longer than that. But thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We will talk to you hopefully on Monday. If not, we will talk to you very soon. Have a great day. We'll see you then.